and Hinduism and Buddhism. They would also say, probably, that within Christianity, those who go to church on a Sunday are the religious sort, and those who don't are the non-religious sort. If you're like me, though, you're a bit ambivalent about the word religion. And perhaps you would not particularly like to be called religious, certainly in some contexts. The word can be associated with being a bit straight-laced, rather intense, perhaps a bit prudish, maybe judgmental or superstitious. Dot Cotton in EastEnders on a bad day. God rest her soul, the actress who plays her. And for some, the description, oh, they're religious, could mean that actually their lives are something of a front, you know, shiny on the outside, but really they've got all the same issues and problems as everyone else. Some committed Christians even use the phrase religious spirit to refer to a kind of counterfeit to a true living faith. So what does the word religion mean? What are we saying when we call someone religious? I often think that it's helpful to find out where an English word comes from, how it's derived. Our word religion comes from the Latin religio, the noun which means a bond, and also the Latin verb religare, which means to bind together. And from this we get the understanding that religion is something that binds people together. And we see this, don't we, whether it's the practice of Islam, binding Muslims together, going to the mosque on Fridays, fasting during Ramadan, saying prayers in a set way, avoiding certain foods, helps sustain an identity, a community spirit. It's very much the case with Jewish people, of course. The Jewish laws and customs have really remarkably sustained a Jewish culture and an identity for around 3,000 years, still going strong today. Jewish people are bound by Sabbath observance, dietary laws, what they can eat and what they can't, seasonal customs that all the family and communities, they get together to observe these customs. Even when Jews, and particularly I think when Jews are persecuted, and of course, sadly, they have been throughout history, the things that bind them together become even more important. And you could say that these religious laws are the reason the Jewish community is so strong and often actually wealthy and influential out of proportion to their numbers, really. And that's one of the reasons why they've often provoked jealousy and envy among others, because of their success in business, and which again comes from the networking and the sound principles that they teach their children, and the strength of their community institutions that underpin their culture. Strong, close-knit families and communities. Well, that can be a very good thing, a very positive thing. There can be a darker side to it, though, can't there? Some very close-knit families or some very close-knit communities can actually be a bit oppressive. Religion can be a force for good, but it can also be a force for bad. In Jesus' time, he often clashed with the religious authorities, the teachers of the law and the Pharisees, who were the particular sect among the Jews who were most keen on really seeking to live out the laws practically every day, to make sure they never transgressed any of the principles of Torah. And so they invented lots more laws in order to put a hedge around the Torah. And so Jews had the Torah, which is the Old Testament law, which contained, most scholars think, 613 commands, half of them roughly negative commands, you shall not do this, half of them positive commands, you shall do this. And many of them related to the temple, so they've no longer got the temple, so they're not so relevant. Some of them relate to the land, a small number relate just to the land of Israel. But there's a lot that Jews still practice today. And you might think, well, actually, that's not too bad. But what the Jews then did was that they developed the Mishnah, which was a way of really explaining further what you could and couldn't do. So the Torah says, no, don't work on the Sabbath day. But Jews thought, well, what does work mean? You know, does it refer to studying or working in an office, or is it only manual labor that you can't do? Does work include working out, going for a run, going to the gym? You know, all these questions. And so the Mishnah was developed, which was about 6 volumes, about this size. And then the Mishnah was felt inadequate, so they had the Gemara, which was about 65 volumes this size. And then there are even more books of case law when Jews thought, well, am I allowed to do this? And they wrote to a rabbi, and a rabbi would give a definitive answer. And so this body of case law grew and grew. And so there's a massive amount of law that Orthodox practicing Jews have to comply with today. It's a bit like, you know, we loaded up Toby and Arthur with all these bricks. And Jesus criticized the teachers of the law and the Pharisees for really being legalistic, pedantic, hypocritical, virtue signaling. You know, actually, they were masters at looking good on the outside, but inside, you know, Jesus said to them, well, you even tithe your spices. Imagine that, going through your spice rack and separating out a tenth of all your parsley, sage and tarragon and whatever you have in your spice rack at home. But Jesus said, you actually neglect the weightier parts of the law, the laws of justice, mercy and compassion, the ones that are, you know, most at the core of what God is all about and his character. And Jesus said, you know, you tie up heavy loads, or you might have said you put heavy bricks on people, on men's shoulders, and you yourselves are not willing to move a finger to help them, just as I wasn't going to help these two lads with all their bricks. I was just loading more on them. And still today in Israel, great reverence is given to the rabbis and the teachers of the law, who